Hello, Europe! We are back after Dominic dragged me kicking and screaming back from our holiday. Some of you said you're about to call the police. No need, we're alive. And very pleased to be back here on Skype in Paris and Amsterdam. Brand new year, same very weird continent, same very charming co-host. How's it going, Dominic Kramer?
It's all okay. I'm over my jet lag. Back in Europe. Happy to be back.
You've been very far away.
I have, yeah. You only went like half of where I went to. I went to New Zealand and it was an incredibly beautiful country, as everyone says. Not only that, but like you go to these beautiful beaches and they're empty. Or there's like one other person on them.
Did it feel like you were in a car advert?
Yeah, some of the time it actually did feel like I was in a car advert. Did it feel like that in Vietnam and Hong Kong?
Yeah, we've both been on the other side of the world. I left the continent for the first time in a very long time to go to Hong Kong, and where I used to live, and hang out with some old friends there, which was amazing. And then I went to Vietnam to see my family in Saigon, which was great. Very hot compared to here. I'm now back in freezing cold Paris. And sorry, what was the question?
Did it feel like a car advert there as well?
Did it feel like a car advert? It felt like a motorbike advert.
Okay.
Many, many motorbikes in Saigon, which was really fun. So yeah, it's been good. So we've had a really long break. It feels like we've been gone forever.
Oh, and guess what? There was something that really exciting that happened when I was in New Zealand. We were in Gisborne, which is the first city to see the sun in the world.
What?
Because of where it sits on the dateline.
Oh.
It used to be, until American Samoa decided to change where they were on the dateline, it used to be the first city in the world to see the new year.
Damn you, Samara.
But we were there having a celebration for my sister and her lovely wife's wedding, who's a Kiwi. They were having a Kiwi celebration with the Kiwi family.
People, not birds.
Kiwi people, yes. And halfway through the party, everyone looked up into the sky and there was like what first looked like a giant shooting star and then we all assumed was a meteorite. Really big and actually making a noise and bright in the sky. And we all looked up and were like, whoa, this is like the most romantic thing that's ever happened, apart from my sister who was like, where is everyone I love? We're going to die.
So romantic.
Yeah, so romantic. I was really moved by it. Anyway, it turns out the next day it was in the news. It was actually an old Russian satellite.
Oh.
So not quite as romantic, but it was a bit exciting. And I did post it on our Instagram. So if you didn't see that, you should really be following our stories more carefully.
Don't tell people off for not following our Instagram.
Okay.
You can follow it if you want to, though. Instagram.com/Europeans Podcast.
Yes, do follow it.
Quite a lot has been happening on this continent while we've been away. Our own country continued to descend into collective insanity. But as you probably know, we don't talk about that on this podcast. This is a Brexit-free zone, a safe space. But it is going to be a big year in Europe. We've got elections coming up in May. Big plans for the podcast. Speaking of which,
we're starting a Patreon. What is a Patreon? It is basically a subscription or membership program for our podcast where we ask a tiny amount of money from our listeners, starting from just $1 a month, to help us to continue making this podcast. If even just a few of you subscribe to help us out, then we will be incredibly happy and it will help us justify dedicating so much of our spare time to this podcast, which brings us a lot of joy, but also a lot of work, as I'm sure you can imagine. And we do occasionally have advertising, but it doesn't make us that much money.
We often get messages from you lot saying, how can I support the show? And thank you so much for making it. Well, now you can. So if you want to buy us a cup of coffee or even support us a bit more than that, then we'd be incredibly grateful for any donations that you'd like to throw in our direction. We'll be talking a little bit more in the coming weeks about the little extra things you can expect if you support us on Patreon. There have been whispers about merchandise, but one thing we really want is for people who support us to be able to get like really involved in what we cover on the show. So as a start, you'll be getting access to a secret Facebook group where you can throw ideas at us and discuss them with us. And depending on how much you want to pledge, Dominic and I will send you a personalized thank you message in true European style with the jingle and everything, and or a postcard from Paris or Amsterdam. So yeah, if you enjoy the show and you just want to stick a few euros in our direction, check out our Patreon page. It is now live at patreon.com/Europeans podcast.
But what have we got coming up in the show this week?
We have some very great guests joining us for our first week back. We have the computer scientist Teemu Ros on the line from Helsinki. He is the brains behind this super interesting plan in Finland to train 1% of the population with a basic knowledge of how artificial intelligence works.
And then I wonder how many of our current listeners were actually around for our first ever episode. Well, if you were, then you would have heard the wonderful Anya Jakubek talking about Frida Kahlo's Polish Connection. She's back by popular demand, not Frida Kahlo, but Anya. And this time she's going to be telling us the incredible story of Corporal Wojtek, a bear who served in the Polish military during World War II. Yes, you heard that right, a bear.
So, brand new year, Dominic. Lots of new things happening. For instance, a couple of new jingles, courtesy of our jingle man, Jim Bunn, including for your much-trumpeted new segment, Commemoration Corner.
Was that an accidental pun around trumpeted?
No, it wasn't. But anyway, let's play the jingle.
Welcome to Commemoration Corner, everyone. 2019 is the year of this segment. It's finally going to take off now. It's got its own jingle. Mm-hmm. And we're starting off with a big happy birthday to the sixth smallest country in the world. Yes, the Principality of Liechtenstein is celebrating its 300th birthday. Founded on the 23rd of January 1719, the Alpine country has a population of almost 38,000 and has a very strong financial sector. It is also one of only two countries in the world to be doubly landlocked.
What, so it's like the filling in a donut kind of thing?
Yes, like the filling in a double donut.
What, so it's completely wrapped in what?
So it's completely landlocked, but then it's completely landlocked by at least one or two countries that is also landlocked.
Oh, double donut.
There's one other country in the world that is also double landlocked. If you can work out what that is without looking at Wikipedia, then please write in.
Speaking of fictional European principalities, actually no, it's not fictional because Liechtenstein is very much real. A massive apology to all of our many listeners in Liechtenstein. But speaking of fictional European principalities, I got really into, over Christmas, this weird subsection of Netflix, made for Netflix films set in fictional European principalities.
What?
Christmas films. So there's The Christmas Prince, The Christmas Prince Royal Wedding, The Princess Switch, and Once Upon a Holiday, I think it's called. They're basically like really low budget rom-coms set in fictional European principalities, like countries that don't exist, called like Aldovia. They're all like these very beautiful Alpine countries, but everyone in them speaks English with a really posh British accent. Very strange.
I'm really glad you used your break well, Katie.
Yeah, I did. It was very productive. But if you happen to have flu, I really thoroughly recommend an entire day watching this absolute drivel.
Sounds great. But in the meantime, we better get on to a good week, bad week.
Good week, bad week.
It has been a good week for Alexis Tsipras, the Greek Prime Minister. He survived a confidence vote in Parliament this week. Bit like our own Prime Minister, Dominic. But unlike Theresa May, Tsipras called the confidence vote himself after his coalition partners quit, which left his party without a majority. So it seemed pretty fair to raise the question of whether Greece should have to have new elections or not. The coalition that collapsed was probably one of the weirder governments in Europe. Tsipras comes from the far-left party Syriza, and he's been in coalition with this right-wing party, the Independent Greeks. They quit the government last week over a little thing called the Macedonian name row. Cast your minds back, listeners, to last year. We did a great episode about this called Macedo Macedon't that has all the background on this, if you're interested. But basically, Greece has never been happy with Macedonia using that name for historical reasons. They have their own region called Macedonia, and they feel like all the history associated with the name, like Alexander the Great, for example, belongs to Greek culture. And this argument went on for years and years and years, and Greece has consistently blocked Macedonia from joining NATO and the EU because of it. Last year, they finally sorted it out. Macedonia, the country, agreed to change its name to North Macedonia. But for quite a lot of Greek people who feel really strongly about it, that isn't good enough. And in fact, we're recording this on Saturday, and there's a demo in Athens against the name change planned for Sunday, which looks like it's going to probably be really big, actually. But back to Tsipras and his coalition partners walking out. This is just the latest twist in the endless drama that has been Greek politics over the last few years. Tsipras has survived multiple elections and confidence votes. He's managed to just about steer Greece through a massive international bailout at huge cost to ordinary people. And this week, he survived again, managed to scrape through the confidence listeners vote, 151 seats out of 300, so just scraping by. So he lives to see another day. But, and it always feels like there's a but in Europe, a lot of Greek watchers think there's probably going to be early elections anyway.
There are some echoes here of what's happening in our home country, Katie.
Yeah, there are a little bit.
In terms of surviving confidence group votes, but still expecting there to be perhaps a new government. I just said confidence gropes.
Confidence gropes? Oh dear.
Freudian, probably.
Tsipras is now running a minority government, not that different from what we have at home in the UK. And the reason people think there might be early elections is because obviously with a minority government, it's going to be really difficult for him to actually get anything done. So possible early elections on the cards, we will see. The polls are suggesting that if there was an election now, it would be the opposition Conservatives, New Democracy, who'd probably win it. So yeah, stressful times still ahead for one of the most stressed out leaders in Europe. But it is good week, technically, still.
I also feel kind of bad that we haven't given good week to the new Swedish government, who have finally managed to like form a minority government 4 months after the election. Quite a long time.
It's kind of amazing how many of our neighbours managed to get on without governments for really long periods of time. Who's had a bad week?
It's been a bad week for a group of protesters in the Spanish city of Segovia. And if you believe the protesters, it's been a good week for Satan worshippers.
Can we play a bit of satanic music at this point?
I'm going to start by telling you about an ancient tale from the area. There is a legend in the city of Segovia from the 1st or 2nd century that tells the story of a serving girl who is exhausted from the daily toll of climbing the mountain each day to retrieve water from the top of the mountain and bringing it down to her master. She's said to have offered her soul to the devil if only he would build some means to help her transport water from the top of the mountain down to the city each day. The next day, she awakes to see that a spectacular aqueduct has been built by the devil in a single night.
Nice.
The story has a happy ending because the girl regrets her decision just before the cockerel crows and somehow manages to get out of her deal with the devil, even whilst keeping this phenomenal aqueduct, albeit with the final brick missing.
Oh, that's all right, though. She gets to keep it. Not a bad deal.
She gets to keep it. I mean, if you ask me, it's pretty far-fetched, but it's a very popular story in Segovia. And
fake news!
One that has inspired a sculpture. This is why we are talking about the area and about the aqueduct, because the sculpture was commissioned by the local council with the idea that it would attract visitors to a part of the city that was otherwise somewhat run down and ignored. The statue features one of the characters in this story, the devil, also known as Satan.
That guy.
He's depicted in a rather jovial-looking way, in fact, taking a selfie, and it's rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. According to 5,500 people who signed a petition calling for the plans to be abandoned, it could actually lead to the area becoming a base for satanic tourism, which I didn't realise that was a thing.
Is that a thing?
But if it is, I think we should definitely investigate and go on our own satanic trip, Katie.
Sounds lovely.
I actually also don't think that 5,500 people is that impressive a number for an online petition, considering anyone will sign anything these days. Nonetheless, it led to the judge temporarily blocking the installation of the Happy Snappy Satan statue until last Thursday, when the local council announced that the judge had subsequently dismissed the complaints and that the statue would be installed in the coming days.
Yay.
So bad week for those protesters who will now have to put up with the satanic statue and actually also have to pay the legal costs. Good week for the possibly non-existent satanic tourism. Personally, I think it's a really ugly statue. So whilst I think it's totally fine to have a statue of Satan looking happy taking a selfie, I think it's a shame that it had to be so ugly.
I'm just looking at it now. I think he looks a bit like, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, the boxer, Ukrainian boxer.
No, I don't know anything about boxing.
Neither do I, but he's going out with, or was, I think until recently, going out with Hayden Panettiere, you know, the American actress.
No, I also don't know who that is, but I'm Googling it now. Hayden Panettiere.
Google Vladimir Klitschko and look at his face and then look at the devil.
Oh yeah, it does look quite like him.
Right? It's him.
Oh wow.
Maybe he was the muse for this Satan sculpting artist. But anyway, write in and tell us who you see in the face of Satan. Let's go to Helsinki. I actually went through Helsinki Airport on my way to my holiday in Asia. Very nice airport, but it's absolutely full of dead reindeer. So it's got like reindeer skins everywhere, which you can buy and use as like nice carpets. And because we missed our connecting flight, Finnair gave me a 17 euro voucher, which I spent on reindeer pizza. How cool is that?
That is kind of cool and kind of disgusting and really inappropriate around Christmas.
Yeah, I know. I just kind of wanted to see what it tasted like. It's nice, by the way. Very nice sort of smoky cured meat.
Ooh, tasty. It's nothing like Auckland Airport, which was full of like giant Lord of the Ring characters and a big... I nearly said Dumbledore. What's his name? Gandalf.
Gandalf. Know your nerd references. Anyway, speaking of nerd references...
We are going to talk about artificial intelligence. How would you define artificial intelligence, Katie?
Oh, I don't know, because I haven't really started the course yet. You've started it. You should know.
I have. So I actually do know that, like, people as a joke define it as cool things that computers can't do. But actually, it's a lot more complicated than that. And I have begun this week to find out a bit more about it because I began this free online course called The Elements of AI that was created by the University of Helsinki alongside a communications agency called Reactor and led by Teemu Roos. Teemu had this like seemingly crazy idea that 1% of the Finnish population should be taught the principles of AI. It was like an incredibly ambitious target, but something that has turned out to be very popular with the people of Finland, and the project now has government backing. We wanted to call up Teemu to talk about artificial intelligence generally and to find out how and why he came up with this idea.
Teemu, thank you so much for joining us today. Actually, Dominic and I have both started the course, so we're feeling very proud of ourselves.
Oh, yeah?
Dominic's got a little bit further than me.
Oh, cool. How do you like it?
I really liked it, and it's an amazing resource to have on the internet for free.
Yeah, that's great.
Could you tell us a bit about how you came up with the idea of training people on a large scale to find out about artificial intelligence?
I had been teaching at the university, of course, for several years, courses related to AI, and I would notice that when I would talk to, like, in a more public connection, that many people would have plenty of misconceptions about AI, even in ways that I feel that are sometimes a little bit dangerous or harmful, that they might get afraid of AI on one hand, and on the other hand, people might not see that there are issues related to the use of social media, for instance, where AI plays a role. And if people don't have the basics at all, then they would be not able to avoid some issues with that. And I felt that suddenly there's a need, and obviously having been teaching that to our students at the university, I felt that it'd be kind of almost like a duty to try and reach out to the general public. So I started sketching the idea at the university, but soon I realized that if we want to reach out to the general public, if we want to make it usable, we're going to need real experts in that. And we were fortunate enough to bump into people at Reactor, which is a Finnish IT consultancy company, and they had a team that'd been working on education-related projects, and they were very eager. They jumped into the team. I kind of attribute a lot of the success to the good team that we had.
And the Finnish government has been really super keen on this idea of getting 1% to start with, maybe even more of the population, having like a really sort of solid basic grasp of like what AI is and how it works. What is the advantage of having people that do non-techie jobs, like maybe they're teachers or they're dentists? What's the benefit of those people knowing all this stuff about AI?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's plenty of motivation for trying to offer and raise their awareness on tech issues, even for people who are not in an environment where they'd be considered tech people. I think even bus drivers, chefs, teachers should know about AI. Actually, I was talking to some people in such professions, and they would be able to give me the examples. A bus driver would be able to say that we could actually organize traffic lights better. And that actually proves the point. I don't know, but the bus driver knows.
Mm.
Okay, so innovation is one thing, and I'm sure it's already having a great effect in Finland. But what else I liked about the course was you wanted it to be readily accessible in order to create a more strongly functioning democracy with informed citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Because AI is going to become such an important part of society. I mean, it already is, mm-hmm. without many of us knowing. Do you think we should be afraid of AI?
No and yes. So the way in which people are usually afraid of AI is related to science fiction robot uprisings or somehow evil AI. That's not realistic. It's completely science fiction, and there's no risk of that happening with any of the current scientific research or industrial applications. But the way in which we should actually be at least concerned is the fact that it can be used to manipulate people. And the use of AI in applications like social media or recommendation systems, that actually poses risks which we've already seen kind of realized in terms of manipulations of certain elections. These are the issues that people actually should be concerned about. That's the kind of relating to the theme of supporting democratic decision making about regulation, installing laws that that enforce people's right to access knowledge and personal data, and so on and so forth. So that's the aspect of democracy that we feel that AI even poses a little bit of a threat to. Of course, the medicine there would be that people are more aware of AI, and therefore they can take part in the public discussion, in the decision making and regulation of AI.
Mm. I mean, I think this whole thing is really interesting because Finland is really clearly trying to get ahead of the curve on this and say, like, look, this is going to be really affecting the way that people live their lives in like 5 years and 10 years. Mm-hmm. Can you paint us a picture of how you think our lives would have changed, how AI would have changed our lives in 5 years or 10 years?
I don't see anything dramatic. Usually we overestimate the change in the short term. In one sentence, the world will be better functioning.
Great.
I don't like words like revolution or breakthrough or something like that. Developments of better applications and better working societies is always a gradual process, and that's what we're doing even now. Of course, the rate of change is it is accelerating, but it doesn't mean that it'd be sort of the night would turn into a day just like that. It is still going to be a gradual change, and we will see setbacks. We will see that maybe the self-driving cars, for instance, they won't come as early as we expected. But it still doesn't mean that progress would be stopped. It's just that it's maybe slower than we expect in the short term.
You're calling us from quite a techie part of the world. So Finland is obviously the home of Nokia, which is apparently producing good phones again, one of our previous guests was telling us. Yeah. And obviously your neighbours in Estonia are famed for being kind of forward-thinking and very digitally savvy.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something specific about the region that's made it good at tech stuff?
Probably the most helpful thing about the Nordic style of living and or the Nordic societies is that we're very stable. Many of the kind of problems that we need to solve in technology are really long-term projects, problems that take decades to solve. And being able to invest, being able to focus on our efforts in the long run with really far-fetched and ambitious goals, it really takes a stable society so that you can count on being able to work on something for a long time. You know, it could be still better. We could have more stable academic research funding, but I think that's absolutely fundamental for us being able to solve such big problems.
I saw that there's been a Dutch version of the course launched. Yeah. How do you feel about your idea taking wings across the continent? Do you feel any national pride in it? Are you like, no, this is our idea? Or are you just happy for everyone to have access to it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We're extremely proud. The Dutch version is inspired by the Finnish program, and they did it their own way. I really haven't gone through it in detail. My mind that Dutch is very rusty, but it was only inspired by the citizen awareness agenda, and they did it in the same spirit. It's also for non-tech people. We've been working very hard trying to find partners globally to bring the course to other language areas, because we know that, of course, in the world there's plenty of people who don't feel comfortable studying in English or Finnish for some reason. So we've been reaching out to several countries, and it seems like the negotiations are progressing pretty nicely. So hopefully in not too far future, we will see other language versions of the elements of AI as well, and we can reach even more people. That's very exciting. And of course, we're extremely proud of that.
How much of a commitment is it to get to the end of the course, and how many hours are you expected to spend on it?
It depends on the background, on like how comfortable you are with the sort of little bit of math notation. There's not much of that, but still there's a bit. and how comfortable you are reading a bit of text and even sometimes writing a bit of text. But I think it's on the average about 30 hours or a bit less, maybe.
Dominic, are you going to finish it?
Yeah, I am. It's my rather late New Year's resolution to finish it and post the certificate online. And you will too, won't you, Katie?
Yes. Can I just Photoshop a certificate and pretend?
There is a code. We'll tell. We'll be able to tell. You're going to be caught if you try and Photoshop it.
Damn it!
I'm just telling you.
As mentioned, Tamer's course is available for free in English and Finnish. Anyone can do it. It's at elementsofai.com. We're now going to go down a bit and left a bit to Poland. We're calling up Anya Jakubek, friend of the show and journalist colleague of mine at AFP News Agency. Anya has just been writing about a little known Polish World War II hero who wasn't actually human. He was a bear. It served in the army alongside human soldiers. And he's now the subject of a new animated film that's going to be coming out. We just had to hear about this absolutely crazy story from Anya. Before that, it's been a pretty tough week in Poland. You'll have no doubt seen the news that Paweł Adamowicz, the popular mayor of the city of Gdańsk, was stabbed to death at a charity event last week. And it's just an awful, awful thing. So we're recording this on the day of Adamowicz's funeral. And we wanted to start by asking Anya how Poles have been responding to the murder of this mayor, who was a really staunch defender of liberal values.
This kind of violent public death of a politician is not very common in Poland. And people are also really upset because this was a mayor who was really well loved. And on top of that, there's this context where the country right now and for a while now has been very politically divided. So the general theme of responses to this tragedy in the country right now is there too much hate speech? People are already taking actions to sort of try to fix this situation. The mayors of Warsaw and Wrocław, they decided to introduce lectures in schools about hate speech immediately in the coming days, weeks. And generally, just it's something that people are talking about, whether the fact that there has been a lot of animosity is what led to this attack. And of course, the 27-year-old man who committed the attack, he was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. People on the conservative side are saying generally that, you know, this is the work of a deranged individual, whereas people in the opposition are saying, no, no, no. This is all because of all the animosity in politics and the fact that the government has, in a way, been turning a blind eye to the hate speech that has become really common.
I remember from when Joe Cox was brutally murdered in public in the UK just before the Brexit vote a few years ago. There was a big public conversation after that as well. And I hope that the country finds a way to move on from this, realizing the mistakes, if there were there, which I think they were. And now we have to find a way to really awkwardly segue into talking about a bear.
Well, I can try here. Okay. So I reported this story recently about a bear. And the reason I really had a lot of fun working on the story was because it was a heartwarming story. And that's something that Poland right now really needs. And I think generally the world needs heartwarming stories because things aren't that great.
So this bear that we're talking about is called Corporal Wojtek, I think is the way you'd pronounce it, or something like that.
Exactly. Perfect pronunciation.
Ah, yeah. Fluent in Polish. Basic question, Anya. How did a bear end up serving in the Polish army?
That is a good question, Katie. It's not a common everyday occurrence, in fact, to have a bear in the army. Although, to be honest, he was not the only bear in the Polish army during World War II. There was a bear named Michał, for example, and then there was another bear who wasn't with the Polish army, but he was also milling about in the war. But anyway, back to Wojtek. So he was found as an orphaned cub in Iran, and he was found by Poles who had been released from the Soviet gulags, making their way through the Middle East. And they found this bear. Apparently, his mother had been shot by hunters, and so they kind of took him along with them. Initially, the bear was with people at a civilian camp, but then he got transferred to a military unit, and that's where he spent his entire World War II military career. He grew up, basically, with the Polish army. The consistent thing I kept hearing from the people I interviewed for this story was that this bear thought he was human.
How much is this just like a really great story, and how much of it should we feel uncomfortable with? Should we feel like, is this like slave labor of animals, or is it fine?
So there is an element of, should I be okay with this? I generally think that this bear got treated really well. From what people told me, from the photos I saw, from what I read, it really looked like the Polish army loved this bear, and anyone who came across this bear loved him, and like he loved them back. It didn't seem like this bear was there against his will. The fact that he ended up at a zoo, I don't know if the bear was very happy at the zoo. I read lines about the fact that he kind of seemed depressed at the zoo, and then whenever some soldiers would come visit him and speak Polish to him, he would pipe up, he would be suddenly very happy.
Was he there just for morale, or did he actually help?
Being a morale booster is actually a huge help.
Of course.
But I guess you're asking, you know, if he killed any Nazis or loaded any guns. But Wojtek did actually help in a very concrete way. I mean, he earned his rations because he helped carry crates of ammunition. These men would have to carry four men to one crate. And Wojtek, if he happened to be, you know, somewhere in the vicinity and he would see this, he would walk over to them and he would stick out his paws as if to say, well, load me up, I'll carry it for you. As a reward, he would get marmalade or honey. He drank beer. So Wojtek really did help. And because of that, there's this the symbol of the company in which he served. It's an image of Wojtek carrying a shell.
And his story is now being made into an animated film, is that right?
That is correct. The story has actually been made into films before, but you can never get enough of Wojtek. This one's going to be a British-Polish co-production, and the movie is supposed to come out in 2020. Yeah, and it's going to be a family-friendly animation called A Bear Named Wojtek. I just think it's such a beautiful story, beautiful and hilarious. There are so many amazing anecdotes about this bear. So he spent some time in Scotland just hanging out with the Polish soldiers, and they would often go to the local pub together. And so there's this anecdote about this Scottish guy talking about how when he was a kid, he was staying with his grandmother, and he looked out the window, and suddenly he sees this bear and these two men, and the three of them are sort of propping each other up. They've just exited a pub. He calls his grandmother over, and her response is, oh, it's that damn bear with the damn Polish soldiers, or the drunken bear with the drunken Polish soldiers. And the way she said it, it was as if this was like an everyday occurrence, as if she said, oh, yeah, that's the mailman, or, oh, yeah, you know, it's raining.
That damn bear again. On the screen of your phone, in the show notes, you will find a link to Anya's story about Corporal Wojtek and a link to her Instagram, because as if being a writer wasn't enough, Anya is also an amazing artist and posts really lovely drawings every day. Check it out!
I wanted to use my first happy ending of the year to tell you about an amazing Swedish Facebook group that I read about over the holiday. The group is called Jajer Her. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it means I am here. And they are dedicated to improving the internet bit by bit, comment by comment. The group is used as a forum in which they flag up articles or social media posts that are being trolled with hate speech, often in racist, homophobic or misogynistic ways. The group followers then head to these posts to like love bomb them with positive messages of support and love. And it started in 2016 by the Swedish journalist Mina Dennett, and it has grown to have 74,000 followers. Of course, there's been like a nasty backlash with threats sent to Mina and her family, and that's awful.
What? God, the internet sucks sometimes.
I know, it really does. But this isn't stopping her, and in fact, copycat groups are emerging in other European countries, so keep spreading the love, everyone. It's a small, easy thing, this Facebook group, but it has like a huge effect, I think.
How exactly does it love bomb these messages? Like, can you give me an example of what kind of thing they post?
For example, there was a Swedish lawyer who won the Swedish Lawyer of the Year award last year. She won it because of her reputation for hostility towards sexual predators. The first responses she started getting online on her Instagram post were really unpleasant and aggressive. massive misogynistic attacks. And once it was posted on the Facebook group, she suddenly got this like amazing surge of positive messages of support and praise. And I think it was quite confusing for her at first. She was like, how come everyone's suddenly being nice? I'm used to the internet being horrible. And I just think that's like super nice as a way of helping people and defending people and, yeah, fighting back against this really vocal minority of angry, hateful people.
Yay!
Yay!
Well, Dominic, I consider my heart to be warmed by your happy ending. Thank you for that. It's really nice because my body is like a little ice block right now.
Oh, babe, you need some heating.
I'm like sitting on a radiator right now, basically.
Talking of that, maybe you should spend some of the Patreon money on that. No kidding. No.
Yes, that's first on our investment list after buying like some nice new microphones, new radiator. Mm-mm. Next week, we will be back with more tales from this strange old continent of ours. In the meantime, you can find us on the internet, as always, where we have roused from our winter hibernation like a Polish bear. We're on Twitter at EuropeansPod. We are on Instagram at EuropeansPodcast. And more on Facebook. Just type in the Europeans Podcast.
Big thanks to Jim Barn again, who has created all these wonderful jingles, including the new ones today. We are
new sounds.
Endlessly grateful to his boundless talent.
Have a great week, everyone. Stay warm, learn about artificial intelligence, and keep clear of the bears.
Do widzenia.
Uważaj.